Many years ago, there was a church split, a schism in an established church that is all too familiar to us. Now, it's not my object today to talk about church splits, but they happen to have occurred in all three congregations that I looked at. We know that they happened for different reasons or for no reason at all. Picture in your mind Boston, Massachusetts in 1890. A beautiful Sylvan Glen out in the country, a beautiful white New England church with that kind of architecture, a white steeple, a bell. Things were not quite as pretty inside that church. There were three warring factions. One faction wanted to move the church closer to the center of town. One faction wanted to get rid of the minister. And a third faction wanted to do neither of these things. They didn't want any change at all. On the night of January 22nd in 1890, a 2:30 a.m. fire burned the church down. The fire department investigated and found the cause to be incendiary, which means that somebody from one of these first two groups burned the church down, deliberately set fire to it, which raises that age-old question for us: do we need these church buildings? Can we think of a better place to spend our money? This building obviously has not always been here. The Presbyterians have not always been on the corner of 7th and Roosevelt. In 1903, Presbyterian families were few and far between in no man's land. Mr. Joe Dean is quoted as saying, "Those early Presbyterian pioneers in Guymon met anywhere and everywhere. Their most frequent meeting place was in a borrowed Episcopal evangelical church located where Highway 54 intersects Main Street today. There was no money for a regular minister, but the dream of a Presbyterian church was kept alive in that small congregation. In January of 1907, the First Presbyterian Church received its charter. A lot was donated by a Mr. Nance, and a small church building was erected on that lot in the south part of town. Those years were struggling years. Membership was small, money was scarce, and Sundays with the visiting minister were few and far between. Judge R.L. Housley, one of the early members of this church, liked to recall that in those days, and I quote him, the fire was built by the first person to arrive for Sunday school. He was also quoted as saying, each person was most versatile and had to be willing to serve in many capacities as elder, Sunday school teacher, choir member, or janitor. In a 1962 brochure promoting the building of this very sanctuary, it was reported that the move to this location came in 1910 when the Presbyterian Church of Guymon bought the little white church on the corner of 7th and Roosevelt from a group of Southern Methodists who were leaving it. They borrowed the money to complete the purchase with fewer than 10 families to pay off the principal and interest. That same brochure in 1962 solemnly proclaimed, to our many young Presbyterians, we still have them, to our many young Presbyterians, we must provide today a more desirable church home, for they are the church of tomorrow. And then that pamphlet, that brochure, concluded with this stern admonition: our obligations must not be shirked. Well, you remember where I left the story on March the 31st, to be continued. At about 5:30 in the morning, the phone in the parsonage of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama, rang. History does not record whether the ringing woke the new baby in the home or whether the young parents were already up. But the 26-year-old pastor, he was Tweedy no longer. He'd gotten his doctorate earlier that year. He took the receiver and he listened intently as the caller told his story. And then Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in his rich baritone, spoke the very first words in the struggle for freedom and equality in the South. He said, "Brother Nixon, let me think about it, and you call me back." Well, the return call came, and by that time, Dr. King had made his decision. Our obligations must not be shirked. He offered his office and his mimeograph machine in the basement of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. That building would be used to organize a mass movement that would change the course of history. From the basement of that church, a small handful of church-going people organized a boycott of the city buses of Montgomery, Alabama, until the economic pressure of that boycott forced the city fathers to give in and allow the buses to be desegregated. That boycott started a movement, and that movement now seems inevitable, but enshrined as it is in the history of the 20th century. But now in the 21st century, we look and see that at the time it happened, it had no inevitability, no assurance of success. There was a lot of risk on from Montgomery and that church to the Woolworth's lunch counter in Greenville, North Carolina. All of you remember all of this, on from Montgomery to buses full of freedom riders in Anniston, Alabama, and Birmingham, Alabama, on from Montgomery to Birmingham, where Dr. King, who is now the firm leader of the movement, was jailed and wrote the letter from the Birmingham jail. On from Montgomery to the March on Washington, where on August 18, 1963, Dr. King gave the I Have a Dream speech. On from Montgomery to the Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964, and on from that little Dexter Avenue Baptist Church to the halls of Congress, where the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964. And then in March of 1965, not quite 10 years after all this started, after Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on that city bus, less than two blocks where it all started, right in front of the Alabama State Capitol in Montgomery, Dr. King stepped up on the back of a flatbed truck and he asked the call and response question that has become most associated with him over the years. The speech is called Not Long, How Long? Actually, it's called How Long, Not Long. Dr. King said, how long? How long will it be? Not long. And then this line, associated with him more than any other. Not long, because the arc of the moral universe bends towards justice. Why continue? Why would we as mortals wish to continue? In one famous sentence in that speech, Dr. King summed up our philosophy, our hope, our optimism, because the arc of the moral universe bends towards justice. Dr. Martin Luther King is gone now, along with many of the Americans of all colors whose lives were affected by those tumultuous 10 years. But the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church remains. The same building in the same location, tangible proof of the progress of humankind, housing a new generation of seekers trying to advance the cause of justice in our world. You can take a tour of that building online, or you can take a tour of that building in person, and you will find contained in the bricks and mortar of that little church in Montgomery, Alabama, the desires of all followers of Christ to be continued. The little white church on the corner that was purchased here by those Presbyterians lasted for five decades, until in 1958, with the baby boomers swelling the ranks of this church, the church built a new educational building here to our west at a cost in excess of $64,000. $65,000 in 1958 is equivalent to $575,005.11 in 2019 dollars, over $500,000. And 4 years later, after they spent the equivalent of $500,000, in 1962, this church advertised the sale of the little white church that sat here and sold it to Donald Hedrick in Hardesty, Oklahoma, for salvage. And he came and tore it down, and as chairman of the building committee for the new sanctuary, before that salvage was accomplished, W.W. Jeffis, that was Worth, advised the congregation by letter dated May 18, 1962, that the closing out service would be on Sunday, May 20th, 1962. And on that last Sunday in the old building, Dr. White spoke on the subject of my 34 years' experience in the church. And he concluded his sermon by saying it was a little hard for him to crowd 34 years of memories into a 21-minute sermon, noting that it wouldn't be for the first time, but it would be for the last time in the old sanctuary that he held the congregation over for 10 minutes. The two Massachusetts congregations that resulted from the church split, that resulted from the fire, they rebuilt their buildings. And they did well for 7 decades, but then the composition of the communities they served began to change, and more people began to move to the outer suburbs of Boston. The memberships dwindled, and it became very clear that all who entered those churches on Sunday morning, that neither of the churches could survive without the other, so they merged, choosing a brand new name, the Theodore Parker Unitarian Church, to commemorate both their American heritage and to stimulate the interest for potential new members. But the new members never came, and by 1976, they really had only 24 active members remaining on the rolls. In fact, that's the number that attended their last meeting, far too few to bear the increasing cost of maintaining their historic buildings. Help was on the horizon in the form of 3 different offers from developers offering to buy their buildings at a price that they never could have imagined. Surprisingly, it was a difficult subject and controversial, and there were even some among the membership who did not want to sell. So they held a meeting, they took a vote, and the final tally was 18-6. The groundbreaking for this new sanctuary building on this place, 7th and Roosevelt, took place as part of the Sunday morning worship service on Sunday, January 6, 1963. The ground was broken with an old-fashioned turning plow. The power was supplied by the entire congregation, with Pastor Emeritus Dr. George C. White guiding the plow. Between the groundbreaking in January, and I find this amazing, between the groundbreaking in January and the first service in the newly completed sanctuary, which took place on November 3rd, 1963, during that span of time, the congregation spent the astounding total of $117,031.28. In today's dollars, that's $976,174.99. 4 years after they spent the equivalent of $500,000 to build the educational building, you are sitting in a sanctuary that costs $92,427. You're sitting on pews that cost $5,540.81. You're looking through stained glass windows that cost $3,682, all back in 1963. The bell carillon, which I hear when I walk home from work at noon each day, cost $7,000, but all the money for that was raised by rummage sales organized by Mrs. L.E. Latham. The first worship service in this sanctuary took place on Sunday, November 3rd, 1963. And Oliver and Pat's son, Stan Tyler, in his tenor voice, sang the same anthem as Becky sang this morning, "Bless This House." A small Freudian slip in your bulletin. It wasn't this old house, but "Bless This House." To be continued, that's what I aspire to, and I think it's what you aspire to, not to be part of something larger than myself necessarily, but to be part of something that lasts longer than I'm going to last. I want a beautiful building here on the corner of 7th and Roosevelt in Guymon, Oklahoma, proclaiming to all the world the gospel of Jesus Christ, and certainly the world has come to our door at 7th and Roosevelt since 1963. But also I want a church standing as a reminder, a physical reminder, to those citizens in the future and to those children that there once was a tough, resilient, optimistic group of Presbyterians whose heritage ran through your parents and relatives, through actual people like R.L. Housley and George White and Mrs. L.E. Latham, people who believed the words of Dr. Martin Luther King when he assured a crowd, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." I'm in the justice business, and I want to see these church buildings where the paint is fresh and you can smell the varnish of the wood and the new carpet and the evidence of leaks right above my head are gone. I envision a 4-year program of renovation and, yes, expansion, the like of which we've not seen for a while in our church. And in this community, I see a shining roof made of snap-in solar panels providing a source of sustainable energy to provide the electricity to run this church plant. I see a mid-century modern steeple looking just as it does now, but having been redesigned into a wind turbine to supplement the solar power for this church. I see inside the south door a modern elevator where everyone, regardless of health or physical condition, can ride down to the basement that we can use again, that it can be fully utilized either as a basement apartment or a restoration of the former fellowship hall and the kitchen. And by the way, we have four kitchens to maintain, including the manse. But the vision, the possibilities are endless. Use your imagination, but the vision cannot be mine alone or yours alone. It must belong to all of us. The drive and the desire to be continued beyond our life here on earth, to have the values that we share in this building today represented by an actual physical building, a place, must be something we all feel and need and desire to be continued. What do you think? As you probably have guessed by now, that 1976 vote by the Theodore Parker Unitarian Church in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, was an 18-6 vote against selling their church buildings. An 18-6 vote to continue the historic mission of their church in America. As a result of that 18-6 vote, the Theodore Parker Unitarian Church remains in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. You can tour it online or in person. As a result of that vote, each Sunday morning an ancient bell is rung and a clock belonging to the church since 1802 times the sermon, which is delivered from the same wooden pulpit where Theodore Parker once stood and preached from 1837 to 1846. And who was this Theodore Parker? Well, he was a prominent American abolitionist and supporter of social reform in America. Some of the sermons that he preached from that pulpit in Massachusetts during the 1840s were later published in a book form in 1853. The book was called 10 Sermons of Religion by Theodore Parker, widely available in the Boston area. And if you were here on March 31st, you remember that's where Tweedy, that's what his friends called him, got his doctorate at Boston University. In the book was a sermon titled Of Justice and Conscience, and the words of that sermon had once been delivered, just as I'm delivering these words from the pulpit in that church in West Roxbury. Theodore Parker once said, and it was recorded later in this book of sermons, look at the facts of the world. You see a continual and progressive triumph of the right. I do not try to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. But from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice.